goodbye to the hiding. Peace and love is colliding. I've made friends with flying, and I'm connected to it all. But when the feathers start fraying, there is comfort in praying. I've made friends with staying, and I'm connected to it all. And now I become one with the world. And now I become one with the all.
Well, good evening and welcome, friends, to Voices of the Sacred Feminine. Whether you're across town or across the globe, I sure hope wherever you are, wherever you're listening from, you're safe, you're warm, and you're feeling embraced by the golden wings of our Great Mother. That cut opening tonight's show was called Connected by Celia, about the oneness of it all. And I'd like to start the show off tonight with a prayer that comes from the Goddess Temple in Orange County. And it goes like this. Great Goddess, the promise of light has come, and with it something new of myself, dawning in the deep dark of my sacred belly. Thank you for my female power to conceive myself anew. Well, opening tonight's show, we have with us Kathy Pagano. She is an astrologer, dream worker, wisdom coach, and storyteller. She's also the author of Wisdom's Daughters, How Women Can Change the World. She's going to be offering her insights on the cosmic story, something we're going to be doing somewhat regularly here, I think. Specifically, what's happening with our upcoming full moon in Leo in the skies on Valentine's Day. Then, shortly after, Barbara Threecrow is with us. Barbara, she's of European heritage. She was born with what's called a caul. I hope I'm saying that right, C-A-U-L, meaning a child with visionary and psychic gifts. She created Medicine Women's Healing Circles and authored 4 books, Mending the Hoop, 4 Sacred Shields, and 12 Sacred Paths, The Return of the Sacred Feminine, and Grandmother's Teachings, The Core of Mythology, Restoring Our Fundamental Nature, and her newest book, The Star Children of Today, Magic and Phenomena. Barbara was mentored by Wallace Black Elk for 14 years. She's a sun dancer, spiritual counselor, teacher of the medicine woman, Earthways, and she's going to share a medicine story and prophecies with us tonight. Well, the chat room is open, so please post your questions, and we'll try to get to them. And I want to get right to Kathy tonight because she has a dream class to teach, and her students are waiting on her. So, Kathy, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Karen. Thank you for asking me on.
Well, we're going to try to start this new little segment once or twice a month called The Cosmic Story. Why don't you tell listeners a little bit about it and, you know, maybe give them, sort of a little bit of background as we start out this series talking about the moons.
Okay. Well, you know, astrology is a beautiful mixture between science and art and masculine and feminine, if you will. But it's really composed of cycles, which I think is very feminine. And just as the moon and the sun form a cycle, all the planets form cycles. And right now we're cooking in a womb of transformation and change that really started in the 60s. And in the 60s, the two outer planets came together, Pluto, which is which symbolizes the power of evolution, of birth, of death and rebirth, and change. And Uranus, the planet of revolution and freedom. And they came together in the sign of Virgo. So it was very interesting. I love the symbolism because the cosmic story, the universe speaks to us, which I love. And in the 60s, those two planets came together to start a new cycle of revolution and evolution. And people have traced this cycle back to every revolution, back to Spartacus before in the Roman Empire. And in the 60s, those two planets came together in the sign of Virgo, which deals with becoming conscious, if you will, of who we are, and also of work, of food, of the environment, and of all of the issues that are up right now again, because these two planets are in a relationship again. So back in the 60s, those two were like a new moon, and it was kind of wild and fun and crazy, and we didn't quite know what we were doing. And at the same time as those two planets were together, right opposite them was the planet Saturn in Pisces. And so all the old rules were dissolving. If you lived back in the 60s, like I did, besides the Beatles, which we just saw on TV 50 years ago, Ed Sullivan, the Ed Sullivan Show, it was one of the magazines, like Time Magazine, had a cover that said, "Is God Dead?" And very much that was the beginning of the feminist movement, of the goddess returning, and of a lot of the old rules dissolving. And this cycle so began then. And now we're still in the womb, but now we're at what you would call the first square, the first 90 degrees. It would be like the quarter moon in the sky when you look up in the sky and the sun sets and there's the moon right overhead and it's the quarter moon. Or if you thought of the wheel of the year, it would be as if it went from winter solstice to spring equinox. It's that first quarter turning. And it's all about the hero's journey, the heroine's journey. Something new was born in the 60s, and now we have to bring it into our society. And so this is the womb that's cooking us right now. And I love it because, of course, all the same issues are up. They're back. We're still dealing with the environment and with food and with women's issues and with workers' rights. And everything that we're dealing with now began in the 60s. And just a little bit now, the planets have moved, of course, in these 40 or 50 years. And so the planet of death and rebirth, Pluto, has gone into the sign of Capricorn, which is the sign of our collective structures, the financial system, the government, everything that we build together as a society. And it went into Capricorn in 2008, and as soon as it did, the financial system started to collapse. And since then, we've been seeing what Pluto does. It's like a rat. It says, let's pull up what's dead, what, you know, like the zombie people. Let's pull up what's dead and decayed so that we can look at it and get rid of it and clear the space so new life can be born. And everybody knows that since 2008, everybody's learning all about the dirty deals and in government, in finance, all the things that really aren't working anymore because it's time for patriarchy to die. And yay. You know, Saturn, the god Saturn, he kept eating his children. It's time for this patriarchy. The patriarchy is so afraid of death that it refuses. It kills everybody before it will let itself die, but I think we're going to get rid of it finally, don't you, Karen?
Well, you know, it reminds me of that old saying, you know how when you have a jealous husband, he'd rather see her dead than with another man?
Yes.
You know, that's how I sort of think of patriarchy. Patriarchy would rather destroy the planet and all of us on it than lose, you know,
yes.
Or change or evolve.
Or change. Or step back gracefully and say to the next generation, please take over now. And so, yes, it is a killing mentality, and it's trying to kill the world, but I believe we will stop it. So anyway, Capricorn will be Pluto will be in the sign of Capricorn until 2024, so we still have a long time to go with there. And when America was founded, if we look at America's birth chart of the 4th of July, the Declaration of Independence birth chart, we have a few birth charts in America, but this is the one that's very much resonating right now. And as the months go on, I'll talk more about that. But Pluto was in Capricorn originally, that because it takes about 240 years to cycle around to where it was. So we are in for a real transformation here in America. So that's why I have a lot of hope. I really feel as if the force is with us, if you will.
Well,
for all of
so
these
another
changes.
So, well, that is optimistic, and you really described it very clearly. Thank you for that. But my question is, you said that I think Pluto is going to be in Capricorn till 2024. So
yes.
That means we have 10 more years. Does that, so when we have, do you think we have 10 more years of this struggle? And can you see what happens after, you know, after, you know, 2024? What does it look like then?
Well, I think that the main part of the struggle has been occurring since 2012 and through 2016, and I'll mention that in a minute. But then, of course, there's still a lot to, and we won't get to when it actually returns to the same degree until around 2021 or so. So, yeah, I think that, you know, our culture is so big and so massive, and the corporations and the powerful, you know, rich people have really shaped our world. And so to get them out of the way, it will take a while. But I think in the next few years is the really important time. And I'll tell you why, because in a minute. But after that, Pluto will go into Aquarius. And so I think that's when we'll really break down a lot of the prejudices we have, because Aquarius is the sign of the group. It's the sign of our unity, like that beautiful song you were talking about in the beautiful prayer. And so Pluto will go through a sign and bring up the dirt, bring up what's not real and what's not viable anymore. And then after a while, it will start to rebuild, because it is the planet of death, but also rebirth. And so I think that, as you know, the next part of the cycle will be like the full moon phase, and that will be in another 50 years. And I think by then, hopefully, we'll have really transformed the world. But we're in for the long haul. Sorry, honey. But this is what we came in to be the grandmothers of the future.
Well, yeah, I'm feeling like that. You know, I'm having the feeling that, gee, I hope I live to see it, you know. It feels like in 25 years, you know, maybe even 15 years, things could be really different and much, much more like maybe we want to see things.
I think so. It gives me hope when people like Marianne Williamson are, you know, runs for Congress. Because I think we need wise people, especially wise women, out there and actually putting their self on the line in terms of politics, because even though politics is so corrupt, that's how we engage with each other. And, of course, that's the sign. Politics is ruled by Capricorn. So by the end, you know, in 2024, hopefully we'll have cleaned up a lot of the corruption in government. Unfortunately, patriarchy sent us all to college in the last 50 years. And when you do have educated people, it's harder to suppress us.
Right.
In some ways. Right. It all depends on if we, you know, get out of our heads and get onto our feet and actually do things.
Right, right. And if there were a way we could get rid of Fox News, you know, it's such a divisive tool out there to thwart progress, you know, really.
Yes. Well, it's propaganda.
Yeah.
But people are beginning to wake up, even older people that aren't, you know, that usually don't pay attention to things. And I think, you know, all of it is, this is just sort of like us seeing the old structures crumbling.
Okay. Well, and
you know,
and
we have to give them time to die, and then we have to also have alternative visions. You can't just take something away and leave a vacuum. So we also have to produce the new vision so that other people who don't have vision might go, I like that vision better, and then get on the train.
Right, right, absolutely. Well, I don't, I will try to stop interrupting you and asking you questions so that I don't keep you too late tonight. So why don't you just go ahead and tell us the rest of what you wanted us to know. Yeah.
Okay. So once again, the womb is this, what we call a square, a 90-degree angle, the hero's journey, the heroine's journey between Pluto and Capricorn, so the transformation of our society. But then Uranus, the planet of awakening and freedom, in the sign of Aries. Now, Aries is all about our identity. And to me, Uranus in Aries is saying, wake up. You're more than patriarchy says you are. Perhaps you're a priestess. Maybe you're a bard. Perhaps you are a healer rather than just a doctor. Perhaps you're a leader rather than a politician. And so we have to get back to the archetypal groundwork of who we are and get out of the stereotypes that patriarchy in our modern culture sort of feed us, because they feed us these things. And because we're unconscious of the deeper meaning of life so often, we forget that we can be more than they allow us to be. And so from 2010 until 2017, Uranus will be in Aries. And it's interesting and in a way horrifying, because Uranus is a sudden surprise and a shock. And the day it went from Pisces into Aries was the big earthquake in Japan in March of 2011. So these energies, people always say, oh, but the planets don't affect us. But think of the planets as sort of an energetic system that we live within. And you can either go with the flow of that energy or you can fight against it. And Uranus, you know, surprises us to wake us up. Now, these two planets, they go back and forth. It looks like right now we are in Mercury retrograde, which I'll talk about in a minute. Planets seem to go backwards from our point of view, but it's about orbit. You know, the Earth is orbiting, and a planet looks like it goes backwards because the Earth moves ahead of it in the orbital structure. And outer planets especially go retrograde every year. And so because of the planets seeming to go back and forth over the same degrees, if you will, when you have planets going retrograde, usually it goes over 0.3 times. You know, and three, of course, is the goddess's number of change and progress. But this time, these two planets are going to square each other seven times in 3 years or 4 years. Seven times. That's a lot. And if you know numerology, seven is the number of initiation. It's of completion, but then going to the next stage. And so this is another reason why I find the cosmic story giving us hope, because we're being initiated. And if you listen to Jean Houston and a lot of the leaders in this change revolution, they talk about this is a time when we need to make conscious choices and make conscious evolutionary choices. And so here's our initiation. We've already had four squares in 2012. We had two in June and in September. In 2013, we had two in May and in November. And a very, very, very big one, the fifth one, is coming up in April, on the 21st of April of this year. And then another one in December of this year, and then the last one in March of 2015. I'm not going to talk about the one in April now, because we'll be talking again on other shows, but I did want to bring up that sort of the cauldron that we're cooking in right now. So here we are with all of this change going on, and you know, and these are big energies. They're collective energies. So we have to bring them into our personal life. So very interesting, on winter solstice, just this past year, Venus, the planet of love and connection, went retrograde. It does this every year and a half or so. And it went by the sun. It was closest to the sun. And it went from being an evening star, and now it's a morning star. If any of you have noticed, if you remember last fall, it was beautiful in the night sky, and then it disappeared, and it went through by the sun, and then it came out the other side, and now it's a beautiful morning star. And so Venus retrograde, when a planet goes retrograde, psychologically we say we take that energy inside and we mull it over, and we make it our own. And so Venus went retrograde in Capricorn, and it made us think, well, what rules do we really want to connect with? What's important to keep? And the day it went direct, it was right next to Pluto in Capricorn. And so it's really about, to me, it's saying symbolically, we have to transform our love nature. We have to bring the heart into the culture. It can no longer be a machine. It can no longer be something that is like a corporation is not a person, you know, to bring the life and blood of humanity into our culture. And we do that, each of us individually, by how we relate to people every day, don't we?
Yeah.
how we don't yell at people on the road when they cut us off, but maybe say a blessing and say, please drive better. You know, it can happen in so many ways. So it's a good thing to watch for. Now, as soon as Venus went direct on the 31st of January, on the 6th of February, our old friend Mercury went retrograde. Mercury goes retrograde three times a year because it's closest to the sun. And so in the orbit of things, the Earth keeps passing it, you know, and then it catches up. So Mercury went retrograde in a water sign and then is retrograding back tonight, as a matter of fact, into Aquarius. It went up to Pisces, and it got as far from the sun as it could get, and then it had to come back. And when Mercury goes retrograde, it says, change your mind. Okay? Change your mind. And there's images connected with the 360 degrees of the zodiac, and the image when Mercury went retrograde was about how do we connect two different things. You know, we need to communicate better. And so to me it's saying it's time to use our left and right side of the brain. We need to think more holistically. We need to listen to our instincts, and then we need to listen to our hearts, and then get our heads to follow the heart's direction rather than have the war that goes on, right?
Yeah.
So many years we've wasted in terms of your heart telling you something and your head telling you why you can't do it.
Yeah.
And now the feminine says, no, I'm the leader. I'm the one who calls, you know, who tells you what is true. And the mind has to help me get that out or get that worked on or get it done.
Yeah,
and
helps you. So it's sort of like now your head is in service to your heart and your intuition rather the other way around.
Yes, it's like we made the servant the master since the Enlightenment. My friend Carolyn Casey, who's a wonderful astrologer, used to say it was the Endarkenment. Because that's really when we totally, as a culture, threw out the right brain, throughout the feminine, throughout the intuition and the feeling, and just went right into the left brain rationality, and that was all it was.
Yeah.
You know, maybe because they were afraid of the superstition or whatever, but it was certainly the darkest time for the feminine, I think up until the 60s and 70s, if you will. But now we're bringing things back into balance, and I think our heart always has to lead the way.
Yeah, yeah, starting to right the ship.
Yeah. And so anyway, Mercury goes retrograde, like I said, three times a year, so it always feels like Mercury's retrograde. Watch out for making mistakes in your checkbook and then finding out there really wasn't a mistake. I did that the other day. Or if you're traveling, you know that you might get stopped for a few hours or you might lose your luggage. Mercury is the god of traveling and communication. So when Mercury goes retrograde, we have to rethink things and redo things and relearn things. And so that's going to be retrograde until the 28th of February.
That's
and then
a long
we get
time.
A day. Yeah, and then we get a day, and the next day, March 1st, Mars goes retrograde. Okay, now Mars is the energy of action. And right now it's in the sign of Libra. And so it's very much about learning to take other people into consideration when you act on anything. And Mars only goes retrograde once every 2 years. And so it's going to stay in Libra for like 6 months rather than 6 weeks. Usually Mars will travel through the sign in about 6 weeks. But when it goes retrograde, it stays in the sign for almost half a year. So we really are going to be working on our relationships this year.
Okay.
And on our ability to be open to other people's point of view, to learn how to be more fair and just. And so this is how we're integrating in this womb of revolution and evolution. Now, this is the year where the universe is telling us, you know, make it personal. Yes, you might have liked, you know, the Occupy movement, and yay for those young kids who are out there on the front lines getting beaten up by the cops. You know, not yay that they're getting beaten up, but thank you for your bravery. But now what are we going to do to help that along so that maybe they won't get beaten up next time? And so these three personal planets, our mind, Mercury, our heart, Venus, and our desires, Mars, they're all, you know, we're rethinking them, we're refeeling them, we're saying, how do I make myself a vessel of transformation? And not only for myself, but for the world.
Interesting. Very interesting.
Yeah.
You know, because it almost
the story is amazing.
It is, and I love the way you tell it because, you know, I'm not an astrologer, and this is something I wasn't good with the math, so you know, my eyes glazed over. But it's sort of like the idea, you know, the way you're telling it, it's almost as if what's happening in the heavens is really sort of the pulse of, you know, what's happening in culture. You know, I guess I've never thought about it quite like that before. You know, but it feels that way. It's almost as if it's our barometer, it's our pulse, I'll have to think of a better word. That's the best I can do for now.
Right. Well, you know, it's an energetic system, and if we truly want to believe that we are all one. Then our solar system is the womb that we're in, right?
Right.
And the relation, you know, even though, you know, people who want to debunk astrology, it's been around for over 8,000 years, so how bad could it be? But anyway, they want to debunk it and say, oh, you know, that they don't, you know, the planets don't shoot out rays or energy. But they do, because they're... You know, they're circling the sun, so they have gravity, and so, you know, they affect each other differently, just like the full moon affects the tides and affects our bodies. And if the moon can affect us, and it does, the planets can also affect us in many ways, very subtle ways. But
okay.
So that's why I say if we know the story that the heavens are telling us, then it will give us hope, but also we can use those energies to transform ourselves.
Yeah, yeah, and, you know, just sort of give us a little extra nudge or a little extra information in how we are in the world, you know. Should we be aggressive? Should we be subtle? Should we... You know, think about a relationship now. Should we sign that contract or wait? You know,
all
of those different things, you know. Okay.
Yeah. And instead of fighting it, which is what patriarchy wants to do, it's my way or the highway, we dance with the universe. And that's why I call it the cosmic story, because to me it's telling us a story. And if we dance with that story, then we're dancing with the cosmos and we'll be in the right story. We won't be in the wrong story.
Yeah, it's really like going with the flow, you know, instead of pushing the boulder uphill, you know. Yeah.
That's right. Definitely.
Well, I
so
know
anyway,
we're
quickly,
probably getting...
I just,
yeah.
We're getting
Go
close
ahead.
To the time, but I just want to mention the full moon is this Friday, Valentine's Day, and it's a Leo full moon. The sun is in Aquarius. The full moon is when the moon is in the opposite sign of the sun. And so opposite Aquarius is Leo. And Leo is all about passion and creativity and generosity. It's like a bonfire, okay? There's three fire signs. Aries is like a lightning bolt that starts a forest fire. And Leo is like a bonfire that just sustains you with warmth and pleasure and you have fun around. And Sagittarius is like you're shooting off a lot of candles, arrows to candles, and you're doing a million things. So it's very beautiful, sustaining fire that Leo gives. And also, Leo's a lot of fun. And so one of the things you can say for this Friday is go have fun. Find your group. Aquarius is all about the group. If you have a partner and you want to go be romantic, go for it. But also, you know, if you don't have a romantic partner, don't feel lonely. Go find your group. Be with your group and have fun. Create energy. You know, use the energy. And maybe you'll walk away with a lot of creative vision and you'll find yourself painting or dancing or drawing or writing over the weekend. To use up some of the great energy that will be generated this Friday.
Well, can I ask you a question?
On Sunday now,
I have to attend an important meeting with a group of women who I care for very, very dearly, and the meeting could potentially be volatile. I'm wondering with the energies that we're in right now means for that meeting. Do you think it would help it be less volatile? Or, you know, what tips can you give me for working with the energies on Sunday? Yeah.
Okay. Well, the moon will be in Virgo, so everybody is going to want to have their own say. So you really need to do like the talking stick, if you will. Respect everybody, what they have to say, but try not to argue about it.
Okay.
And, you know, the talking stick when everybody shuts up and only one person can talk, right? Because we jump in, we don't really listen so often. We start thinking about what we want to say or our beliefs or why we don't agree. So if you could really, you know, do a little prayer and say, you know, each person has something so unique to offer, and even if we don't agree, let's give each other the respect and listen.
Okay.
That might be good.
All right.
Virgo is very much about getting the details. Find out who's good at what details, too. And then, you know, if somebody is really good at one thing but somebody else isn't, don't let the person who isn't be in charge of that thing.
Give it
to the person who knows what they're doing.
Okay. Makes sense.
Okay. Okay.
Well, Kathy, does that sort of wrap up what you wanted to share for tonight?
Yes, except for one thing. This doesn't have anything to do with astrology, but if you know Eve Ensler, the lady who wrote the Vagina Monologues on Friday,
absolutely.
All over the world, they're doing 1 billion rising, and go out and find a group near you and dance. And dance against human trafficking. Dance against the domination of the masculine over the feminine, and dance for life. That's what I would say.
You know what? Thank you for bringing that up. That's very important. And thank you so much for interrupting your class tonight to be with us. Please tell your students we thank them, and it's been great. I appreciate what you shared with listeners tonight.
Okay, and I'll talk to you again next month.
Okie doke. Good night.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Good night.
Well, I can see my next guest is on the switchboard, so if Barbara can hear me, and I'm sure she can, I will be with you in just a minute. I just wanted to make a couple of announcements, and then we'll start our chat. So listeners, you probably heard in the last few weeks I've been talking about my new book, Goddess Calling, Inspirational Messages and Meditations of Sacred Feminine Liberation Theology. Whew, isn't that a mouthful? Well, it is now available to pre-order, whether it be Amazon or your local bookstore. So I hope you will go over to one of them and put in your order. If you order it now from Amazon, for instance, you get a 20% early bird discount, making it less than $20 with shipping. It's got great reviews from Jean Houston, Barbara Walker, Z Budapest, Joan Norton, Isadora Forrest, Liz Fisher, and many others already. And pre-orders are so important for new books. I hope you can help by going there now and placing your order. And thank you, dear listeners. You truly or gas in my tank in so many ways. And while we're on the subject, I mentioned last week my upcoming book launch party for the Goddess Calling book. I'm going to be doing this great presentation on the feminine faces of Goddess in Washington, D.C. The name of the event is Founding Mothers, Goddess in Washington, and Liberation Theology of the Sacred Feminine. It's going to be April 19th for men and women. So please save the date if you're in Southern California. I hope you can make it. Well, the new news about that is we have lined up the incredible talent. We're going to have internationally renowned drum and rhythm facilitator, Rowan Storm. She'll be doing interactive rhythm balance. There will be songs and chants by the Circle Singers, and just incredible, amazing sacred belly dance by Maria. Truly, truly, the party is going to be a feast for the senses, for both your left and right brain, your divine feminine and sacred masculine within. We're appealing to the cognitive and the intuitive you. And if you've ever wondered about the goddess sites in and around Washington, D.C., and the possible connection between the founding fathers and goddess, well, my visual presentation will offer some tantalizing clues. You'll leave with few doubts that they ever intended the United States to be a Christian nation. And if you've yet to visit the internationally acclaimed Goddess Temple, the only one of its kind in the world down there in Irvine, this is the perfect opportunity for a visit to see what's new and glorious at the temple, including new centerpiece in the sanctuary, the larger-than-life-size statue of Sekhmet on her pyramid throne. So much going on, and you know what? It's all free. So mark the calendar, Goddess Temple of Orange County, Saturday, April 19th, starts promptly at 7 to 10. So please, if you're coming, it would be great to RSVP to me at KarenTate108@ca.rr.com. So thank you for indulging me and getting the word out, and I hope my dear listeners within driving distance will make this important and amazing event. So we are getting ready to cross the threshold into the next part of the show. Please stay with me after our next guest, Barbara Forcrow, for my What's the Buzz segment, when I chat with you about the bees buzzing around in my bonnet that speak to what's happening in the world, whether it be supporting or marginalizing women and ideals of the sacred feminine. So, Barbara, welcome
yes.
to the show.
Thank you. My name is Three Crow.
Three Crow. I'm sorry, Three Crow. I don't know where that came from, Four Crow.
Four number.
My apologies. Thank you.
Right.
Thank you for your understanding. Well, at the top of the hour, I told listeners, and I got your name right then, I told listeners about your European heritage, and you were born with a call. Is that how you pronounce it, Barbara? Call?
It's call.
Call.
Like
it
with
okay.
C-A-U-L, call.
Okay. And yep. and I mentioned your books and that, you know, you had Wallace Black Elk as a mentor and that you're a sun dancer and you teach the Medicine Women's Earth Ways. So listeners are ready for you. And, you know, we want to hear about your medicine story and your prophecies. So why don't you go ahead and start where you feel is appropriate.
Well, thank you. First of all, I want to thank you for reaching out to me, Karen, and giving me the opportunity.
Well, it was great to hear about you and your work. I was actually referred to you by a listener, as I am so many of my guests. So I'm really grateful when, you know, when listeners, you know, point me in a good direction like they did with you.
Well, that's good. Thank you. Yes, my heritage is a mixed bag, as for many of us, and I do have Celtic lineage, which is the European heritage, and in from this part of the world, Nanticoke, which is an indigenous people here in Turtle Island, where we all live. I'm in upstate New York. Where are you, anyway?
Well, you know, I am actually in Venice Beach, so we are on opposite sides of the country.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, I got online to find out who you were also as a sister and, you know, a woman doing beautiful work, and I wanted to find out, you know, what you're up to, and it was very interesting and very exciting. And I also... I'm very excited about the many things that women are doing and sort of the awakening that is happening. And so speaking of awakening, I'll start with my own personal awakening, which I refer to as a medicine story or the medicine story, which is sort of signifies an event in a person's life, and I know we, the listeners, and you as well, I'm sure, can all identify with some circumstance, unexpected change or shift in your life that was quite traumatic. It could very well come from a death of some loved one or a diagnosis of an illness. And in my case, it was a diagnosis of cancer, and I use the term la-la-la a lot. We go along in life, la-la-la, and we think everything's fine, we're on the right track, and we're all set. But oftentimes, there is another part of a plan that we are unaware of. You could call it the divine plan, or spirit's interceding in where we are going or where we think we're going, or creator. And before we know it, something occurs in our life, and there we go, down another pathway, completely unexpected. So I was in the la-la phase of my life about 20 years ago, and working very hard and thinking my life was fine and doing my best. And just to reflect a little bit on the call thing, you know, the C-A-U-L, many people might know what that is, but in the old country, if you want to say call the old country, especially with the Celtic heritage, a person, a baby who's born with a call is known to who will have the vision. She will have the sight, or he will have the sight.
Mm-hmm.
And that means they will have visions, they will have prophecies, and this is what that means. So in my life, I was born that way, and I had a lot of early experiences, quite a lot of phenomenon in my early life. And I grew up in a household where my grandmother talked to me about the little people and the fairies, and she would darken the room, and my aunts and my grandmother would levitate the table and call in the spirits. So that's how I grew up, and they all knew that I had these psychic abilities, and it was sort of ran in my family, I guess you'd say. But during this period of time, about 20 years ago, which, by the way, just to give you an idea, I've just turned 71 last December. So we're looking, you know, 20 years ago, maybe a little more now, actually. And I was in that phase of my life, just with my nose to the grindstone, and I would hear oftentimes throughout my life guidance, as you, I'm sure, understand that piece. And the guidance I kept hearing was very distinctly that I needed to gather women into circles. Now, I was not involved in any type of teaching or earth teachings or women's circles or groups or healings, anything like that at that time. And I didn't really understand what I was being asked to do, and I frankly ignored it. And I really ignored it for 2 years. I'm pretty stubborn. And then I received a message from that guidance that said that I was going to be diagnosed with breast cancer.
Mm.
And that a few months later, I found a lump in my left breast, and then I, of course, explored and went to get it checked out, and it was malignant. So during that time, of course, it was quite stunning and terrifying, and I started on a whole other track of paying attention to how I was eating and meditating and visualizing and saying no to a lot of people. I stopped working, you know, really to turn my attention on myself, my healing and my well-being.
Right.
And during that time, I was in meditation and prayer, and I received a vision. And in front of me appeared a face. And it was quite a shocking vision, because the face was very wide open eyes with a wide open mouth and a tongue sticking out, as though it was as though it were expelling something. And as I was, I, when you meditate, your eyes are closed, and I'm looking at that field in front of me, that blank field, and there's this space appearing. And then I'm hearing the words, you have to go to the mountains, go to the mountains. Now, where I live in the Hudson Valley, and the Catskills are here that are very beautiful, and I live near a place called the Manitou, which the indigenous people in this part of the world was very sacred to them, and the Manitou meaning where the spirits live. And I took a journey up there the following day, and I spent hours looking and looking, and I knew instinctively that I was looking for something that replicated this particular vision. I didn't know what it was.
You mean the face? Something that replicated the face?
That's right. And it turned out that I saw a landslide, like a slide of stones, blue stones, and I was guided to walk over there. And at the edge of the stones, there was a stone on the ground, a flat stone, but the surface of it was carved with the eyes and the mouth and the sharp nose and the ridge for eyebrows. It was really as though someone carved this deliberately. And so I picked it up and went back to my studio, and there I started to listen, and following guidance again, I had paints, and I was guided to paint in the circle for the eyes and the circle for the mouth and the tongue and various other designs on the surface. While I was doing that, my studio was facing the Manitou, so I was not that far from this very sacred place. And I started to hear voices of women chanting, and I went into another realm. I left that room, and I was just engaged completely in another experience. And
was that something that would happen to you often, or was this a new? Were you surprised because it was a new thing for you?
Well, I have had things like that happen to me in my life. I've left my body. I've had out-of-body experiences. I've had a lot of communication with beings, elemental beings, the star people. So it wasn't unusual for me. It didn't frighten me or startle me. It was quite powerful. And I was a little confused because I didn't understand what was happening to me in that moment. I didn't know what this was, what the purpose of this was. I was just listening to this guidance, which is part of the piece here of the medicine story, is very significant about listening to the guidance that we do receive. Even though I ignored for 2 years particular guidance. And I'll tell you a piece here after I just finish up this little bit of story here to continue with the significance of a medicine story, how it changes our life. A medicine story is something that happens to you unexpected, that is a traumatic experience, and that it completely changes your life. It like drops you off of a cliff. And you have to change. You have no other recourse but to change. And oftentimes this is led, I would say the majority of times, this is led by, like divine providence, that you must make a change in your life now, and you're not listening. And it's for the better, actually, although it's terrifying because, change is terrifying. After I came back from this experience, I was standing there in the room, and everything was silent, and I heard the message that this was a ritual, a healing ritual. And I knew in that moment that the cancer was healed. And in fact, that is what happened. And so because the guidance that I received was asking me for 2 years to gather women into circles, I said that I would do what they were asking me to because I received this healing, and I knew that it was related. I knew that they had sort of, it was like a last resort, you know? You know what that means, Karen? Like,
well,
spirit is asking you.
Yeah, so let me just ask you a question, because I want to make sure I understand the significance. Do you think you found the cancer because that was it? Maybe in a way it was because you hadn't been listening to the guidance to start the women's medicine circles, and so the cancer was shifting you into a different place, but then when you listened, there was no need for you to have the cancer. Is that what you're saying, or am I misunderstanding?
No, you're pretty much right. What I'm saying is that I was resisting a direction that Spirit was asking me to go in, that in fact I was supposed to go. It's part of our original agreement. And I was denying that. And I was denying it, but I was also frightened. You know, I didn't want to change my life, and I didn't know what I was being asked to do. But a medicine story is something like that that happens to you where Spirit really needs you. I say Spirit needs us to be someplace. In the great divine plan, all things are lining up. And if we're slacking off, or if we're slow, or if we're denying or ignoring the messages and guidance, Spirit will do little things to us, try to get us moving, or try to get our attention, or try to make us see that, you know, it's important to make the shift.
Right.
And if we don't do that, they may hit us with a 2x4, and the cancer was a 2x4.
I see.
That's
okay.
How I say. Like, so
okay.
This is about a spiritual awakening from a traumatic situation.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
well,
I agreed. Hmm? Okay,
well,
that's
pretty profound in itself, you know. You know, the cancer leaving you like that. That's really incredible.
Okay. Yes, it is. It was. That's why. And here's the point where we can always remain reluctant. We can always say, "Well, thank you for the healing, and now I'm just going to go on my way." We all have those choices, and many people have a traumatic experience, an awakening. Incident, but they don't receive the awakening. You know, it's meant for them to awaken. That's why it's called a medicine story, through a traumatic experience. It's a spiritual awakening or a direction in your life. Things happen to us to awaken us very often, and they can be very traumatic, very devastating. I guess I've come to realize out of my own experience, and also speaking to others, because I work with other people, especially women, in counseling and guiding them, is that when things happen to us, there's a gift in every experience, no matter how difficult it is. And if we choose, we can find that gift and receive something, you know, useful or beautiful from it.
Right. Well, you know, it's interesting that you say that, Barbara, because last year was probably one of the most difficult years my husband and I had in a really long time. We were in a horrendous car accident, but we walked away without a scratch. And then about 2 months after that, my husband had a heart attack, and we were very fortunate he came through that okay. And I kept thinking, what, you know, why are these things happening? Why are these things happening? And, you know, all year I toyed with it. You know, I kept thinking, what am I not seeing? You know, what am I trying, you know, what is Goddess or the universe or Source,
right.
You know, what are they trying to show me? And,
right.
You know, I spent most of the year, you know, trying to figure it out. And I got to be honest with you, I'm not 100% sure, unless it was to say, you know, you're protected, you know, you're protected in spite of, you know, things may happen, but you'll be protected, or just to appreciate every day, you know, because you see how quickly it all can be snatched away from you, you know, or maybe
well,
it was
very true, and that's very significant, because we often get very far, very distant from gratitude and from understanding how beautiful our lives are and the gifts and the miracles in our lives.
Right,
and
right.
I think, well, oftentimes we, you know, we fall short of that, or we get stuck in some place, and it's in, sometimes it's an internal thing. We're not even aware of it. It's unconscious.
Yeah.
You know? And,
yeah.
So I think that in every type of experience, and I've read other people's experiences. I've read people having these horrific experiences, tragic experiences, and they make something beautiful out of it. I mean, they grow from it. They excel to a different place, especially a spiritual place.
Yeah.
You know, I say spiritual, you could say religion. It's either or because they're different to me.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. So this is, and everyone I think has a medicine story, but it's sort of like something that shifts our life so dramatically and it awakens us.
Yeah.
That's the medicine story. But
yeah.
If we don't take the pieces that are important and grow from them, then it's not much of a medicine story.
Yeah, it's sort of a wasted opportunity.
Exactly.
Yeah, we have to find the gift in these difficult circumstances. So you got the vision, your cancer was healed, and, you know, not to gloss over that too lightly, I mean, that's incredible. But then how did you know what to do next? Or
well,
did the teacher appear?
I didn't. Here's the thing. I really didn't know what to do, and I think that's why I was so terrified, because one of the part of the resistance was, I don't know what you're asking me to do.
Yeah.
But just to add to this little piece here, 13 years after that vision, my son and his girlfriend then gifted me a book on on indigenous ceremonies and rituals. And within that book, I found a ceremony, it actually was a healing ceremony, in relating to the Crow Nation, the nation of the Crow people, that has to do with a spirit stone. I work a lot with stone people. They're called the stone people or the sacred stones, spirit stones. I use, I'm a keeper of a lot of medicine stones that I use. And it relates...
Now, when you say, wait, Barbara, when you say stones, you mean like rocks and crystals and things?
Not crystals. Those are crystals, just rocks,
okay.
But there's certain kinds. They're not...
Okay.
Yeah, when you... These particular types of stones have certain properties. They look a certain way, or they'll have a certain energy about them, and they often, they sort of like vibrate, and they get your attention, and you pick them up.
Okay.
You know, they're like, hello, I need you to take me over here, or I'm a healing stone, or I'm a dreaming stone, or I'm a stone that can find lost objects. The story of the Crow Nation and this particular this ritual or ceremony was brought to the people by Tobacco Woman, who was a spirit, and apparently a stone spirit will appear to someone in a different formation or a different form that guides them through a ritual to heal a major illness. And this is exactly what happened to me, because I went in search in the mountains. I saw the vision, and I went in search into the mountains and found a stone. And the stone had the identical markings that formed the, like I said, the face of this being, this entity, this spirit. And that stayed with me. I still have that stone, and in many women's circles. So what happened then, I agreed to begin to gather women into circles, and I put up little flyers, and the guidance, the spirits kept saying to me, don't worry, we'll help you. And they told me that this had to do with a prophecy of women, the sacred feminine, the return of the sacred feminine, and women's returning to sacred circles. And that's how that began.
Wow.
And so over these many years, the guidance has been coming through to help women to heal and to bring them back their medicines, their sacred medicines, and their wisdom, the wisdom of the grandmothers, the ancient wisdom of the sacred feminine, and to develop these gifts, their original gifts, to heal the wound of the sacred feminine, which is, as you know, generations.
Yeah.
And we basically do a lot of that work. And the prophecy relates to the return of the sacred feminine. Now, this was over 20 years ago, and we are in that we are in that now, the return of the sacred feminine. We have been moving into it all those years, and now we're really strong into it because, you know, more and more women are coming into sacred circles. More and more women are awakening and understanding the imbalance within themselves as well as relationships, as well as on the earth. And this is about the breakup and the shattering now that we are in, which is the breakup and shattering of the patriarchy dominator rule. And what that is if you think about everything in our history, even European history and American history, that everything has been put in place, political, financial, education, everything, religion, by the patriarchy dominator rule. Correct?
Yes, absolutely, unfortunately.
That's correct. But, I mean, it wasn't always that way. And that's where,
yeah,
of course, your goddess work comes in. And that's what we are all understanding, that it wasn't always like this. And so, but that did start to happen. And I write about that in my book, The Return of the Sacred Feminine, about what did happen, what happened to the sacred feminine. How did this all start? You know, so
well,
I do talk about that. You know.
Well, you know, Barbara, there are a lot of scholarly theories about that, and I just wonder which story do you feel is authentically true? You know, how did we lose the sacred feminine?
Well, you know, I'm a little bit of a conspiracy theorist, so...
Yeah, me too.
pardon?
Me too. I mean, it's
okay,
like once you...
I'm in safe territory.
Yeah, I mean, because look, it's like once you find out what's been hidden from you, then you start to get suspicious and, you start to question everything, you know?
I think you have to.
Yeah.
And that's, I keep telling everyone, you know, we grew up with believing everything we were told. We start off very early with that, you know, believing the authorities, believing everyone, and this is how it is.
Right.
But something inside of you, I had this, perhaps you did too. So there's something inside of you that keeps whispering to you, something's not right. This isn't
mm-hmm.
right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like when I grew up Catholic, and
me too.
When I was told in Catholic school that, you know, we are born with original sin, it just didn't seem right to me. I just could not comprehend that piece. But anyway, I certainly was in love with Mary, you know. She was just my saving grace, you know. And but I did leave the Catholic Church emotionally when I was 10 because I received a message that this was all a lie, and I saw certain things that showed me that. But I sort of stepped away as I got older. But I feel that, yes, I feel that there is an agenda and that it's a very dark agenda. And I feel it's because of I really hesitate to use the word power because this is probably the issue, the power of the sacred feminine. But it is about the power of the sacred feminine. And there's
mm-hmm.
nothing wrong really with that word.
Right.
But it is that power of the sacred feminine and how that sacred feminine relates to, of course, women, the female,
mm-hmm.
but also male, but also the earth, the mother, the holy mother.
Yeah.
The sacred Mother Earth and the Mother-Father Creator. Now, I believe that the Creator, I call it Mother-Father Creator, because we've been told what the Creator looks like. That's another myth. But I do believe in an omniscient, loving essence, a Creator. And I refer to it as Creator, Creatrix, or the Mother-Father Creator, because
mm-hmm.
I feel that there is no difference. There's no separation.
Mm-hmm.
And this separation is the agenda, separating, and the negating of the sacred feminine, because the sacred feminine, if we look at ourselves, for instance, as women, women were originally peacekeepers. All of the indigenous peoples in this part of the world and probably other were matrilineal. And the elders say that themselves. There are indigenous people who don't say that now because they've been brainwashed themselves.
Right.
So you have this deliberate demise or assault upon, at least an attempt to completely annihilate any sign of the sacred feminine for the purpose of manifest destiny, for the purpose of...
Well, define what you mean by manifest destiny. I mean, I know that was a phrase they used when they, you know, kind of hit the shore of North America and they started moving west and thought it was their destiny, you know, their entitlement. But do you mean it in a different way?
Well, the manifest destiny basically is the piece of that it's our destiny, it's manifest destiny, that we can come here and just destroy everything at our whim.
Yeah.
We don't have to be conscientious. We don't have to care about things. We can just, you know, as we are doing now, we can just basically destroy everything. I mean, it's not an intentional let's destroy everything, but it is because of greed and because of the uncaring. And how can we have peace if, how can we have a peaceful world if girls and women are raped and violated and murdered?
Right. Right,
how can we? We just can't. We're not going to accomplish that because it's that mindset of destroying anything so sacred as another human being, certainly, but a woman or a child, a girl child.
Yeah.
So I feel that there is that. There is that hidden agenda that set out to destroy this beautiful, harmonized, balanced aspect of the Sacred Mother, the Holy Mother, which we hold as women. That's who we are.
Yeah.
But we, you know, we have to come back to that. So the return of the sacred feminine is about women, ourselves, coming to the circles to learn about ourselves as sacred, number one, and others as sacred, and our part to bring a balance back into our lives first as well, so that we can lead the way by our own frequency, let's say, or our own vibration, our own loving heart and compassion, which
is
Barbara, the mother.
I'm curious if you ever have these thoughts, because I have these thoughts. I agree with everything you're saying 1,000%. But I wonder if you've been given any visions or you have any thoughts, you know, just from your own intuition or experience about how, I mean, sometimes I think part of the reason we're not accomplishing more is because so many women are still brainwashed. So many women can't be in solidarity with other women. It's still about competition rather than, and you know, standing shoulder to shoulder and letting it be about the we and the us and seeing the big picture. Do you ever think that, or is that really maybe not as important as I'm, you know, as I'm worried it's important?
Well, I think that it is, you're right. I do agree with you on that, but I don't think that we should get lost in that. I think that what's really significant is what I've understood by the guidance that I've gotten in relation to the work that I've been doing with the women is that this is about frequency, energy, vibration. And you know, the heart, of course, is the loving heart and the compassionate heart and the sacred feminine. These are higher frequencies. So how do we affect those others who are sort of falling behind or not yet awakened? You know, this is what we really have to look at.
Yeah.
One thing is the raising our own vibration, because we are, in fact, significantly connected energetically. You know, there's a saying in the indigenous way is called Metakwe Oyasin, which means we are all related. And we are all related, but then you have to think about, well, how are we all related? You know, it doesn't mean we're just a family here on the earth, a big family of all different colors. What it really means is energetically we are all related. Our vibrations are constantly interacting with each other. we feel each other's energy. We receive each other's thoughts and feelings and experiences. This is part of our fundamental nature, especially for women. And it's not just humanity, it's all of nature. Nature is living essence and vibration and awareness and intelligence. So, excuse me, we talk about the sacred web. What is the sacred web or the divine matrix? For instance, the Earth herself, as you most likely know, is has a matrix or a web or ley lines. It's all the same thing. And during creation, this is what happened, that there is living, the ley lines are her energy force or her chi or her life force. And upon the earth, so it's a great web. It's a great sacred web. But then that web goes out into the atmosphere, out into the whole of the universe. So we call it the great sacred web or the universal web. But we are part of the web, too. We're not outside of it or separate from it. We are one with it. So, and I have seen the sacred web. It's just extraordinary. It's just, it's very real. And you can look online even, and they have ley lines all laid out. There are photographs of it and pictures of it and YouTubes of it. And these are, of course, manufactured by people who are studying this, but it does exist.
Right, right.
So what does this mean? All the sacred sites, all the goddess sites, all the sacred sites throughout the whole of the earth were all linked through these ley lines. Why? Why did the ancient people go to all that effort, monumental effort, it's just extraordinary what they've done, to link all of the ley lines, because they are linked. They are all on sacred sites, all on sacred ley lines, and they connect all throughout the whole of the earth. Those are man-made monuments, and then you have natural monuments, like you have Mount Shasta, for instance. That's a chakra point of the Mother Earth. There are seven chakra points throughout the whole of the earth upon the Mother, and they're natural formations. But then you have the ancient people who built the monuments, Stonehenge and various other temples, the pyramids. These are all on ley lines. It's quite amazing. Why? I wrote about that in my recent book, The Star Children Today, and I've talked about that a lot in my books. Because, so, you know, when you go to a site, a sacred site, which I believe you are doing, that you go there with an intention. And we need to understand the intention that we need to hold when we go to these sites and what the ancient ancestors did. Because these are these are matrix points on the earth, the temples. Meaning, you know, when you go for acupuncture, you know, your body, you have matrix points and you have the energy flow between them.
Right.
The earth has the same thing. The temples and the sacred sites are on matrix points, which is the highest telluric point on the earth. Telluric point means a high frequency of energy. For instance, Notre Dame was an ancient site for the Holy Mother during the Druid time and long before that. I don't know if you know this or not. I thought this was pretty amazing. So beneath Notre Dame is one of the most ancient sites for the goddess. And they plopped the Notre Dame on top of it. So that's a matrix point. That's a high telluric point of energy.
No, go ahead. I was about to ask you, when you go to these places, you said it's important what your intention is. Is it the idea that whatever you're holding when you go to these places, whatever your intention is, does it get magnified throughout the matrix?
That's correct. So that's why it's very important that you hold a very good intention, that your intention is to raise the vibration, raise your frequency, which raises the frequency of that matrix point, which then flows through all of the ley lines to the next matrix point and so on and so forth throughout the earth. And that energizes the mother. That energizes her frequency.
Right,
and that's what
right.
the sacred sites were for. And, of course, the ancient ones, they went there, they danced, they lit fires, they fed the spirits, they drummed, they sang, they, you know, this was raising the vibration.
Right.
And there, many of these sites are made from certain elements. The stones mm-hmm. within them are often crystalline stones. They have different frequencies. There are stones that are singing stones. When you go to these sites, you can experience the different energy, the different frequency. If you are an adept, you often can have visions there, or spirits will appear. The stones will speak to you. But these are living sites with high frequencies, but they are very dull now. The frequencies are lowered because of what's happening. And it's been many, many centuries that they have been either forgotten or bowled over and a parking lot has been put up or nobody goes there anymore or people don't
yeah.
understand why we go. You know, we just go as a tourist.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I totally get that. Because it's like a reciprocity. You know, I think about that this movie, I think it was one of the King Arthur movies, and he was, Arthur was talking to the Lady of the Lake, and they sort of alluded to the fact that, you know, maybe she was a goddess of the lake. And
yes.
she said she was fading away because the people didn't remember her
That's
anymore.
That's right. That's exactly right. There's something of the myth. What was
yeah,
it?
I mean, and it just it felt so right to me, you know. It's that if you it's energy in, energy out, you know. It's this reciprocity, and if you don't feed it, it can't, you know, it can't vibrate and feed you back.
That's correct. It's just like a plant. If you don't nurture the plant, if you don't water it, if you don't feed it, it's going to eventually die. It loses
right.
its life force.
Right.
And that's the same thing with what's happening to the mother. That's why it's so important that we go to these sites, you know, that we do make pilgrimage to these sites and we do go there with an intention and make our offerings and sing and give that compassionate love back and raise the vibration of the mother's frequency. And which reminds me, when we started talking about this, your question was about those who are falling behind or not awakening and who are desperately, you know, missing the pieces here, and yes, they are brainwashed. We have all been brainwashed, and this is another part of the agenda that really links to the whole beginning of the separation and the assault upon the mother, assault upon the sacred feminine. And so, yes, there is that brainwashing, and I was brainwashed, weren't you?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
So,
I mean, till I was 30 years old, and I was appalled. I mean, I was just literally appalled when I found out, you know, everything that had been kept from me, and that's what started me on this quest to do what I do, you know, because I figured there were other people that needed to be awakened as well.
I often question that because I sit with a lot of the women and I say, okay, why were we... What makes us different, and I'm saying it's not better, but what makes us different than those who are walking around seemingly like they're zombies, because they really are?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, so what comes to me, what the answer is that, because you know the word light workers, there are some of us that have come here to do this work specifically. They're called light workers,
mm-hmm.
star children, for instance,
mm-hmm.
and the healing modalities, the consciousness modalities, you know. They are specific people who have come here to do this work. And then there are others who have come to do something else. And it doesn't mean that one is better than the other. It just means that this is what it really is. But it doesn't mean that we can't affect the vibrations and frequencies of others. And I know that you and most likely your listeners know what I'm talking about, because you know the power of love, you know the power of compassion, you know the power of the voice, of song, of the drum, and these are frequencies and these are energies, and when you shine your light, let's say, or when your frequency is in that beautiful place and you're in alignment, people notice it.
Yeah.
And you are affecting them. We are affecting them. And this is, I feel, the work of the women. It's not that we need to get out there and rant and get upset and angry and push people. We need to raise our frequency. That's why we gather in the circles. We need to gather together. We need to go to the mother. We need to go to the waters. go to the sacred sites and do that sacred work, because that right. is the way of the goddess. That is the way of the sacred feminine.
Well, and you mentioned loving compassion, and you know we've talked about, you know, how do we, you know, how do we reach these people? You know, how do we reach the haters? How do we reach the people who are divisive, the ones, you know, actively working against us, trying to oppress us, trying to exploit us? And you know, we always come back to the same thing, you know, that they are filled with fear, and the only way we really can get them out of that fearful place is with love and compassion. I mean, it's the only thing that makes sense, as hard as that may be to do, you know?
And that's very true, and it is hard. And but it's very hard for us because we're only human, too. And we get frustrated. We fall into the fear place ourselves. We get it overwhelmed because it's escalating. And that's where we have to be very careful. We have to pay attention to those types of energies that want to basically drag us back into that lower frequency. And that's a very, you know, a very serious place. So that's why
right.
it's not easy to do this work, but nobody said it was going to be easy, but we agreed to do it.
Apparently so. So Barbara, in looking over some of the other things we talked about chatting about the interview, you mentioned something about miracles and visions. And,
yes.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. I have one beautiful one to tell you. So, you know, I told you that I closed the door on the Catholic Church when I was 10. And then, of course, I had to keep going to church because I was only 10. But emotionally, I really detached myself. And so all of these years until I got on this path and made this shift through that vision and started with the women's circles and started receiving this very, very strong continuing guidance in relation to the sacred feminine and the shifts and changes. Well, prophecies started, you know, coming. But then I had never spoken the word since the time, I guess I was 10, God, or I turned my back on the Holy Mother Mary and Jesus, you know, Yahshua, which is his true name, Yahshua. And that was just in the past. I did believe, I continue to believe in an omniscient creator, a divine essence or entity or intelligence. That's true. And then I spirit guided me to Wallace Black Elk, which was another vision, which is got me there. And on the in the indigenous way, of course, he was Lakota elder, and so I began to follow this way, and I just found home. I just came back to home because I had been searching for something that really would sing with my own spirit, which was pretty much in relating to earthways, you know,
mm-hmm.
walking the way of the upon the Mother Earth with gratitude and awareness of the living earth herself, and being conscientious of that, and certainly ceremony in that tradition is a beautiful, beautiful way. So I felt like I had come home. I really wept during the first ceremony because I just said, oh, my goodness, I've been looking for this all my life. And this is the truth. This is my truth. You know, this has to do with the earth, with every living being, the creatures and everything, that we are related, that we're not separate, we're not above, we're one with, and the beauty of honoring everything in that way, and this ancient ceremony really, really touched me deeply. And so then, of course, my language shifted into the prayers to Creator, or in the languages Wankantanka, which means God or Creator, and Tunkashala, which is the same, similar, but it's also the higher beings. So, and I didn't speak the word, as I said, God, or because I had turned my back on that. And then I had a traumatic experience, another, I call them spiritual, they're spiritual tests, you know, we're always being tested. Enough with the spiritual tests, but we are always being tested to strengthen us. I come to realize that. If we say to the universe, I want to be of service, I love the mother, and I love the creatures and all that is here. What a beautiful gift we've been given. I love the children and those coming, you know, those to come yet. I want them to have clean water and so on. So I want to be in service. I found my pathway here, and I feel this feels true to me. The ceremony, the prayer, the doing the sacred work with the sites and so on, the stones and the waters. So I'm speaking to the universe, and when you say to the universe, I want to be in service, you better be careful, because you will be put to service. You will be put to good use, mm-hmm. and they will always continually test you, because you need to be strong. We do need to be really strong, because look what we're dealing with.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
So we have to have strength. We have to have faith. We must have our faith. And so sometimes we fall short of that, or sometimes we get sidetracked, or sometimes we start to doubt. So these are spiritual tests, you know.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
When you shine your light, all kinds of things are going to come to you. You're going to draw all manner of things. When your light is shining, you're going to draw the positive and the negative.
Mm-hmm.
The negative, the dark negative energy, that frequency says, wait a second, there's a light shining over there. Let's go and check it out. And we don't want any more light. No more light. We like it this way.
Mm-hmm.
We like fear. We eat this. We're like a buffet. They eat the fear. They eat the doubt. They eat the jealousy. And they eat the hatred and the greed. So if you have people shining their lights and moving out of that and raising their frequency, they better be prepared. So then you have the other coming to you, which is, you know, the higher frequencies, the essences of that say, well, they want to help. They have to be strong. So let's give them this challenge. Let's give them that challenge. So that's how it works.
Yeah.
And
makes sense.
So I had a really, you know, very challenging period last year, a little over a year ago, and I had an amazing miracle. I had another vision. I'm so blessed. I call them miracles. I say, how many miracles have you had in your life? They're not necessarily visions, you know. Every day is a miracle. I'm sure you and everyone listening can find the miracles in their lives. But we don't call them,
yeah, we
right?
just have to look. We have to look for the gifts.
We just have to look, and believe me, there are many miracles. But this particular vision, I saw the Holy Mother. So I was, again, I was had my eyes closed because I was exhausted and I was in a state of despair. And I saw before me the whole of the universe, like the cosmic realm. And there was like something in there floating. And as I looked, I kept looking, and then I saw the Holy Mother. And this term, I know it sounds corny, but I'll tell you, it was there. It was a host of angels behind her. You know, it sounds like I'm quoting something from the Bible, but it was. And she said, or I heard the message, we are coming. And we are bringing love and compassion and healing and peace.
Oh, that's lovely.
Isn't it?
And it's reassuring.
I was, you know, the tears were rolling down my eyes, and it was just an extraordinary gift. And then what I realized was, you know, Creator, God, Mother Mary, they didn't leave me. They've always been there. I just shut the door on them.
Right, right.
You know, I just shut the door, but they've always been there, and that's very true. And I say that because of the many miracles in my life, because I know that the miracles now is God, Creator, touching me, showing
yeah.
me, nurturing me in some way, lifting me up, you know. And that's why I think that it's very important that we do look for those miracles, that every day is a miracle. Life is a miracle. The sun coming up, the green, the snow, the birds, everything. The
yeah,
beauty.
Yeah, Yeah, we just unfortunately, you know, we take it all for granted. And, you know, myself, too, I grew up a Catholic in the Bible Belt, and I was fortunate that my family wasn't real religious. So it, you know, it never really got its claws in me, you know. But when I found out the damage the church did, I really, you know, turned my back in a real negative way. But then, you know, but then it started to occur to me that I could still embrace the sacred masculine without the institution. You know, I could still think about the energy, the teachings of Jesus, as whatever he is, you know, avatar, God, wise man, whatever he is. I don't care what label you put on him. You know, separate him from, you know, the dastardly institution, you know, that is the patriarchal church. And, and then once I did that, it was easy. You know, it made all the difference in the world.
Yes, and, you know, this piece about the women coming into sacred circles to gather their medicines once again and to heal their deepest wounds so that they can actually lead the way for the men. And
yeah,
that means we have to break the patterns that we've been brainwashed to set up between ourselves and men. And men can't do it. Women are being asked to do this. And I said, why do women have to do this? And Spirit said, because the women can, because they're givers of life, because they
yeah.
are peacekeepers, because they are mothers and grandmothers and aunties and sisters. And originally women were peacekeepers and
yeah.
related to the sacred feminine, the Holy Mother. So that's
yeah,
why women... Yeah.
It just seems like it comes more natural to women, you know.
Well, we're healers.
Yeah.
We're healers. We really are. And women originally, before all this stuff started to happen, the women were the healers. They were the medicine women. They gathered the herbs. They gave, you know, helped the women give birth. They were midwives. They were the healers and the nurturers, you know, and
yeah.
that they had that ability, and that was just the fundamental nature of women, and there was a balance between the male and the female. There wasn't
yeah.
this disparity. There wasn't this hatred. There wasn't this, you know, I mean, just take women's intuition. I mean, women's intuition is a joke. Oh, yeah,
yeah.
Women's intuition, but women's intuition is a gift.
Well, and, you know, I think about, you know, when Hillary starts running for president, you know, we thought we saw ugly with the racism. Well, we're going to see ugly big time with the sexism. And,
oh, we sure are. It's
and,
already
you know,
started. Yeah.
Yeah. And I can't help but think that maybe this sexism, first of all, that the racism, the ugliness that we've been seeing since Obama's been in office, it's almost as if it's served, how do I want to say this? It's almost as if it served a purpose to remind us about the ugliness that's there. And I think we're going to see the same thing with the sexism, to remind us about it so that we can go, so that the, as you would say, you know, the, you know, maybe those of us who are vibrating at a higher level and the ones that are, you know, who have the potential to vibrate at a higher level say, no, this isn't the kind of world we want to live in. You know, we're going to change it. We're going to shift it into something better. But, you know, if you're asleep and you don't know that ugliness exists because it's gone underground, it's almost like you don't know that there's anything to fix. I don't know, maybe that doesn't even make any sense, but in the moment it makes sense to me.
No, I think you're right, because I feel I've come to the understanding through these times that there are people who may never shift, and perhaps that's part of what they came here to take part in. I don't know. I can't say for sure, but I do believe in a divine plan, but I also believe that we have choice.
Yeah.
We were given the ability to choose. That's something the Creator gave us. Can shift. Those people can shift, but some may not. And that's something that we can't spend a lot of time with. We just have to continue to really focus on what we know to be true, and also to really be very aware of what we're being asked to do energetically, because this is, we can't ignore this energy piece. We can't ignore that we are beings of energy, that everything around us has a frequency. We have a frequency. You know, when you meet people, you feel good or you feel not good. You feel, gee, there's something, I don't know what it is, but I don't feel comfortable around that person. Or you say, gee, I really love that person. I just love being around them. Why is that? Because we're sensitive to each other. We're sensitive beings. We have sensory perceptions are really heightened, and some people have higher frequencies. Other people don't. They have lower frequencies. They're depressed or they're angry or whatever. But we sense this. Well, the whole of the universe, the whole of the earth is vibrating with one frequency or another, either a higher frequency or a lower frequency. And so we have to look at this piece. It's so significant. That's what I'm trying to get people to understand. What are you vibrating today, I ask them. What is your vibration? Because your vibration is affecting the whole. And your vibration, basically the divine matrix, according to universal law, she, the divine matrix, mirrors her environment. Think of that.
I was just reading what somebody in the chat room is saying, and I think they want me to share this with listeners. Fountainhead said, perhaps those who do not shift need a new transmission, as they may, however, be trying to change speeds but come up with an inability to make the change. And then someone earlier was saying about Jesus, I couldn't figure out how to classify him, and they said, yes, he's a rabbi, a teacher, a dream interpreter. So thank you for that input, listeners. Barbara, we are getting close to the end here, and I want to make sure I say that to you in case there's anything else important you feel like you want to share, because we're going to have to start wrapping it up here in about the next 5 minutes. Is there anything, I sort of just gave you your lead. Is there anything I failed to ask that you wanted to chat about?
I do want to talk about specifically the power that we hold, that we don't realize it, because we've all been trained and brainwashed to believe that we are powerless. And what the power is our faith, and the power is prayer, and the power is our song, and the drum, the power is the dance, the power is the circle of women. You come into the circle, and there you are. You are side by side, and you are facing each other, and that is so beautiful. And it's the oneness is the power, and it's the oneness of ourself first, body, mind, and spirit, and also it's that the faith is the really important piece. And understanding all of what I just said is about frequency. That's your frequency right there. And the power of the frequencies to heal the Mother Earth, the waters, the songs, the water songs, the offerings, as we were talking about before, the reciprocity, gratitude, all of this is a frequency. It's a power that works to shift and harmonize the earth and the divine matrix, including ourselves and everyone around us. So we are not powerless. And I have great faith, and it's come a long way to be able to say that. To be able to say that, when I went into the light, and one of my out-of-body experiences, I was taken into the light. And people talk about that near-death experience. I had a non-traumatic near-death experience, which some people do have. It was the same. I was in the light, and it was the most divine, loving, embracing, beautiful, extraordinary experience, which we have very limited language to express what that really is like. So I use a lot of that, that expletives, but it doesn't really tell you. But I came to understand that what it is that when we leave our body and go into that light, whether it's a near-death experience or it is an actual death, what is happening is that we are being embraced by the divine. We are being embraced. We are going back home. We are egoless. We have no fear. There's no sense of fear. There's no awareness of sadness or fear or doubt. That doesn't exist in that experience. So then when you're told you have to go back, which I was, I started to feel terrified. I didn't want to go back. I didn't want to come back to Earth. And I was a young mother. Didn't matter. I wanted to stay.
Stay, yeah.
And so I was heard this voice said to me, no matter what, everything will be all right. And
mm-hmm.
that, truly believe that. If we
yeah.
hold the frequency, it's going to be all right. And we can make a difference. And women, those women or men that are lost, we have to pray for them. We have to send our light out really strong with that intention. The intention goes in the direction. Speaking to the Creator and the Holy Mother, the Goddess, to intervene, to intercept, take my prayer, this light, take this beautiful light and spread it on the mother in Africa, spread it on the mother in the Middle East, spread it into the hearts and the minds and the spirits of those who are lost. That's, you know.
Yeah. Fountainhead is writing here. She said, I would say that frequency is a wavelength, a thought length, which occupies a space of silence and thereby vibrates. You know, and something I was thinking too, Barbara, yeah. as I was listening to you talk, you know, I think we have these ideas of what the power is, you know, when you said we have power. And, you know, we've grown up thinking power is, you know, the guy with the biggest stick or the most bombs or,
yes.
you know, that sort
negative.
Of bullying power. Yeah, that negative, oppressive dominator power. So I think maybe it's hard for people to understand that you're talking about a new power, you know, a power that, you know, maybe a lot of people think is, oh, just kind of woo-woo, silly stuff, you know, women with drums and song. But because, you know, it's not a power that we've been taught is a power or to respect that, you know, it just seems like it's something frivolous and,
I hear what you're saying, but I must say this is not a new power. This is an ancient power.
Oh, of course.
This is
yeah.
ancestral. This is the power. These are the tools. You can use you could say whatever you want about it. These are tools that were used. These are age-old, ancient tools, and they have purpose, great purpose. And sound.
Yeah, I totally agree. I just think that we have to look at them differently. You know, we have to look at them as tools of power rather than just something peripheral. You know,
I do know what you mean. That's why I said I hate to use the word power, but in fact, it is about power because
yeah.
power. It's powerful. You could say powerful, but it is a very important thing that deliberately has been negated in relation to women.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, yes, there's a bunch of women drumming in a circle. Guess what? In the ancient groves of the Druids, you know, that became, you know, a threat.
Well,
and
I can't help but think that it's not just the drumming and the chanting and the dancing. It's also just the solidarity of the women in the circle. And I think that's what patriarchy fears. I think that's why patriarchy uses the divide and conquer kind of mentality that has us compete with one another rather than try to share and care for one another. Because I think if more of us felt what that is to be in that circle again, to be in that solidarity, to vibrate at that higher frequency, you know, I think patriarchy wouldn't stand a chance. You know, it would just...
That's why the prophecy said the women must lead the way. Because
yeah.
if women stop being jealous of each other and women come together as sisters and really heal this, well, you know, you wouldn't be fooling around with somebody else's husband And what is he going to do if more women stop doing that?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can say, no, I respect my sister. I may not know her, but I'm a sister, and I'm a sacred feminine. And she is also, if we come to this understanding of what this piece is about the return of the sacred feminine, the return of the goddess, it's all the same, but it is about that love and compassion and that sisterhood. And with the sisterhood, you respect yourself and you respect your sisters. And if we all do that, well, where are men going to go? They're going to have to line. They're going to have to do something. They're going to have to shift. That's why we've been asked to do this work, you know.
Yeah.
And that's why, yes, there will be people who will say, oh, you know, this is a lot of woo-woo stuff. Well, you know, they're going to say that. That's where they're stuck. That's
weird. Yeah, they're narrow-minded, you know, narrow-minded in their own little boxes.
Well, they're
also
afraid.
Yeah.
You know, I think the fear, you said it before, fear, there's a lot of the fear about this.
Yeah.
You know, because this is not about taking over men. This
right.
is side by side. This is about healing and balancing and harmony. This is not about overruling men. This is not about dissing men. This is not about hatred of men. This is not about that. Because
that would just be patriarchy in a skirt, you know. What would be the point, you know?
That's right.
Well, Barbara, this has been an awesome conversation, and if you'd like to mention your contact information again and your books again and how listeners can reach you, please do.
Well, people can reach me. My website is down, and people can reach me at starbeingatpronetisp.net. So that's where they can reach me.
And your most recent book, Child.
It's The Star Children Today, Magic and Phenomenon. Yep.
Okay. And that one, aside from what the title can tell us, just sort of a brief synopsis of that?
Yeah, it's about some of the things we've been talking about, but it's based on the Star Children, Star Children today. This is generational, and there have been Star Children coming through many, many centuries, but significantly started in the 40s, so that those who are now maybe were born in the 40s very well could be grandparents of Star Children today. There's a huge influx of Star Children in the last 15 years. And these are, people call them crystal children or rainbow children, but it's the same. And these are children who come here very noticeably advanced, very wise. And there's a certain list of what signifies a star child. But these children are being diagnosed with ADD and ADHD. Because of their, they are receivers. They're also senders of information, energy, frequencies. They're highly psychic. They're very creative children. Some of them are falling through the cracks, especially in the education system. I talk about the education system and star children. Of course, all children are special. This is not to separate children. This is just signifying star children and what does signify them. What is a star child? All children are special. They all have gifts. The star children are specific in that they came here during this time. The earth changes. They're bringing a certain message, and they, you know, need help. I write in the book how to help the star children. What the education system is doing to the star children. I was speaking at a school, a local school, about the star children, and all the teachers knew who these children were. They just didn't know what to do with them. And I basically said, you have to throw your textbooks out. This is a heart-centered relationship with these children. It's not about what the book says, how to teach these children or how to train these children. These children are here as messengers about the Mother Earth and what's happening and humanity, about how we're lost and what we need to do. And so these are some of the things I write about. And I do write about the sacred sites. I do write about the frequencies. I do write about this ancient knowledge that we need to return to in relation to the sacred sites and our own work with these tools, with crystals, with stones, with sound.
So, Barbara, can your if they put your name in Amazon, will your books come up?
No, I don't have them on Amazon yet. No, they'd have to get them through me, through my email.
Okay. All right. Well, Barbara, thank you so very much for your time tonight. It's been a wonderful conversation, and it feels so good to know you're out there, and I love your prophecies and your visions and your outlook and your wisdom. Thank you so very much.
Well, thank you also, Karen. Thank you very much. Take care.
Okay, and stay in touch, okay?
All right. Thank you.
All right. Good night.
Good night.
And I want to thank Fountainhead for her comments, or his comments. I'm not sure whether Fountainhead is a woman listener. Her comments. She's saying her comments. She said a few other things here. Let me go up. She said tribal power of the greatest. Oh, wait a second. Hang on. Here we go. She said, I would say that a frequency is a wavelength, a thought length, which occupies a space of silence and thereby vibrates. And then her other comment about what we were saying, tribal power of the greatest tribe of mankind who believe in spirit, hopefully not trying to convince the others that only our spirit is knowing. Then she said, walk peacefully amid the noise and haste, but remember what peace there may be in silence as far as you can, and without surrender be at peace with all people. And she said, star children are innate leaders, game changers. And Fountainhead, her name is Deanna. Thank you, Deanna. From Desiderata. I'm not pronouncing that right, I'm sure. So thank you so much for you folks in the chat room for adding to the conversation tonight. And I only have a little bit of time left, and I owe a couple people some mention. Rowan Storm, she's an incredible drumming facilitator and drum teacher. If you're in the Southern California area, she's going to be having a class on the west side March 15th. If you'd like more information about that, you can go to her website, rowanstorm.com. Also, I wanted to share with you something that a listener sent in, Jenny. It's an excerpt from a new study titled Red States, Blue States, and Divorce. And basically, the excerpt said that researchers concluded that the conservative religious culture is a fact majorly contributing to divorce, that because of the social institutions they create, actually it decreases marital stability. Specifically, puts pressure on young people to marry sooner, frowns upon cohabitation before marriage, teaching abstinence only sex ed, and making access to resources like emergency contraception, all forces people into earlier childbearing ages and less solid marriages from the very beginning. So it's interesting that, you know, these people out there who are against sex ed and, you know, all of these other cultural restrictions are actually the ones with the, with worse divorce statistics. And anyway, so it came from the study Red States, Blue States, and Divorce, Understanding the Impact of Conservative Protestantism on Regional Variation in Divorce Rates. It was published this month in the American Journal of Sociology. And Jennifer Glass was the demographer from the University of Texas. who set out to discover why divorce rates would be higher in religious states like Arkansas and Alabama, which boast the second and third highest divorce rates, respectively. But liberal states like New Jersey and Massachusetts, their divorce rates are not so high. And, you know, it's because of what she said, the social pressure of people to marry sooner. You can't live together. You can't, you know, abstinence rather than sex ed, no emergency contraception. All of that stuff forces people into bad marriages, basically, that don't last. I am going to save all of the What's the Buzz stuff for the next show. I just don't have enough time tonight because my conversation with Barbara, you know, I thought was too rich to cut off. So I will get into some of the What's the Buzz stuff later on the next show. The other thing I wanted to share with you, because it seems appropriate, is sort of it's along the lines of what we've been talking about tonight. You know, I still get through email some of the Kabbalah teachings because I was a student there a few years ago, and some of them are really good. I mean, I didn't like the patriarchy of Kabbalah, but they really did have some good teachings. And one came across today that's called It's About All of Us. And I think it's really important. So I think I'd like to read it to you to close the show. Karen Berg says, when we start studying spirituality, things may get noticeably better in our own lives, but we mustn't forget that here is still a tremendous amount of pain and chaos in the world. Still, so many souls that can't even conceive of the possibility of living a life with light and abundance. So who are these people? First, there are those who say, hey, what do I need this for? I've got my life. I know what's good for me. I may not be the best person in the world, but I'm not the worst either. I'm okay. I'm fine. Then there are those souls living a life so filled with the big I that they feel they know they have no hope of coming into anything better, no way of reaching a spiritual goal, no way of caring for another human being or being cared for themselves. So she says, sure, we all want things for ourselves. Every single person has a natural desire to receive. But when we understand the spiritual rules, that we come to know that the only way we can create lasting blessing in our lives is by asking blessings for someone else or by asking for something that allows us to be a benefit to those around us. As we grow on our spiritual path, let's not forget that there are still many souls to bring along with us on our journey. Our journey is not about the big I. It's about all of us. So appropriate, don't you think? All right, then. I think that will about do it for tonight, dear listeners. Thank you so much for tuning in, as always. You keep me going here. You are the gas in my tank. And I think I'll close with this brief little prayer from the Goddess Temple, because I opened up the show with a prayer from the Goddess Temple that's down in Irvine in Orange County, Southern California, an actual brick-and-mortar Goddess Temple. It's been around for 10 years. The prayer goes like this. Great Goddess, the seed of my sacred new self quickens within. I feed my magnificent soul self growing within now. Thank you for my female power to become fresh and new. Blessed be. Ah, good show tonight, listeners. Thank you so very much for your listener loyalty. Have a good week. Stay warm. Think about those around you. Think about vibrating on a higher level. Think about being the light. Think about shifting things over to ideals of the mother with love and compassion. So, I'll let Alea Deo's words close us off for tonight. And this is her song, Awaken. Good night, Fountainhead, and thank you.